Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them they have always wanted to write. And I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. My co-host and producer for Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. It's Thanksgiving week. Do you got any plans?
I'm excited. Yeah, actually, every year I go to my, he's my college roommate, my best friend. His family has a farm, and they cook a week beforehand, and they just have tables and tables of food.
A week beforehand.
A week beforehand. It's the best Thanksgiving I've ever had. My parents are like, come join us for Thanksgiving. I'm like, no way.
No thank you.
No way.
And where is this farm located?
It's in rural Georgia somewhere. I'm not quite sure where.
You're keeping it secret so
exactly.
We don't all ascend upon the place.
Exactly.
Great. And the permanent guest host for Right Here, Right Now, Vanessa Lowry, has joined me as well for our Thanksgiving show. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's good to be with you, too. And I, you know, just want to take this opportunity to say how grateful I am to be part of the show. I mean, I think it's just been such a wonderful journey with you to see how the show evolves and the wonderful people we talk to. And I also wanted to be sure and say thank you to our military are so instrumental in giving us the kind of life that we have. And I'm so excited that we've got guests today that I can say thank you to in person. So
yeah, well, I appreciate
thanks for letting
that.
Me be part of it today.
Yeah, great. I was not expecting that, but thank you. You've been a rich blessing throughout the whole process as well. And as Vanessa indicated, we're combining Thanksgiving with a nod to our veterans all in one show. And we've got three veterans who are also business people with us. And our intent is to speak with each individually to provide our listeners with a bit of background. And then we want to have a wide open conversation on the job situation for veterans, how our guests are helping to address that situation, suggestions they will share with us as to what we can do to help. Just to honor the vets or to help them find work or whatever. And as always, we will ask our usual question, what part does writing play in your work or in your business? And our guests are Richard Teeters. He goes by Dick. He is a retired U.S. Army colonel, Vietnam veteran, executive director of the Center for Accountable Leaders at the Coles College of Business, Kennesaw State University, and a lecturer in business and economic history. We've got Bill Williams, who was in the Army. He left at the rank of captain. He had enlisted, and then you commissioned out of Officer's Candidate School, Vietnam veteran. He's a franchise advisor with Axiom LLC. And we've got Mark, even though I crossed it out, I'm still tripping over it. It's Mark Eister, U.S. Army Sergeant Major, retired. Really impressed with Sergeant Major. That's a kick butt position, isn't it?
You know, like sometimes it kicked my butt.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get into that. And Mark is the Director of Military Outreach for Georgia Perimeter College. And I think I did that in the appropriate rank. So we're going to start with Colonel Richard Dick Teeters. Why did you choose to do the military for a career?
Oh, do you want to go back that far?
Yeah.
Actually,
that was yesterday, right?
That was just yesterday. I guess I tell people that it's one of two reasons, either too many John Wayne movies or the fact that I was raised in the desert of Saudi Arabia since I was 4 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
And so when you're kept in a camp with 12-foot cyclone fences and the barbed wire is facing in, as you grow older, you think that maybe you've been imprisoned in a foreign country. And so it's kind of interesting. The draft board that controlled the young men in our area was Foreign Board 100. And as far as I know, no one has ever been drafted out of Foreign Board 100 because that's where all the ambassador's children and those people out of the State Department. And so as far as I know, they've never been drafted. So those of us who got in volunteered to go in.
Wow.
And so our schooling went through the ninth grade. And at the end of ninth grade, we had to choose either go to Europe or back to the States to school. And I chose to go to New Mexico Military Institute. Mm. And it was through there that I went through ROTC, took my commission, and went on active duty.
Wow. And did you see action in Vietnam?
Yes.
What was your role over there?
Well, there was a couple of roles. One, I commanded one of the largest infantry companies out of the Central Highlands for a while. Then I commanded a tank company on the DMZ and out into Quezon towards the end of the war.
You saw some serious action.
Some people did, yeah.
Yeah. So post-war, then what?
Oh, post-war, stayed on active duty and served in Europe a couple of tours. And then my health went pretty bad after about 12 years of being an armor officer. And so I went into the finance and accounting business for the rest of my career.
Hmm. Okay. And you retired and?
Retired. And upon retirement, went to Kennesaw State University and have been there either full-time or part-time ever since.
And you enjoy that?
Love it.
I figured as such. Okay, that's our brief intro there. Captain Bill Williams, I know that would get your attention. Why the military for you?
Well, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up. I was going to college, and one semester full-time, one semester part-time. And we had a thing going back then in those days called the draft. And mm-hmm. as a part-time student, you did not retain your student deferment.
You were highly eligible.
So, yeah, and I, well, the true story, I actually went to the Selective Service Office to check on my status because I was going to go to another school, and I wanted to find out if it was qualified for the deferment. And this is hard to believe, but the woman actually asked me my name a second time and reached into her outbox, and my classification as 1A was sitting there.
Oh, my.
Oh,
and I asked her what that meant. She said probably 90 days or less. And so I walked out of that office and down the hall to every recruiting office, every branch, and picked the Army because they had a school called Flight Operations that was as close as to the curriculum that I was looking at for another school. So I enlisted to get the Flight Operations school, and then while I was down at Fort Rucker learning how to dispatch airplanes and things like that, I realized I didn't like pulling KP and chopping weeds and painting rocks, right? I had qualified for OCS as I went through the test, and so I decided to try that. I went through the boards, got through two or three boards at Fort Rucker, and then finally was sent to Transportation Corps OCS in Fort Eustis, and and from there went into aviation, Army Aviation, which today is its own branch, but back then it was just part of transportation. And, there I was.
And you did serve in Vietnam as well.
I got to help the Vietnamese people celebrate Tet in 1968, we had some interesting times, but, I was not out in the boonies like Dick, occasionally, we were entertained with fireworks on as they decided to take a shot at our base or two.
Mm-hmm. And you left. You did not make a career out of the military.
No, I did not have an undergrad degree. And at that point in time, we all knew that there was going to be serious cutbacks as Vietnam wound down. And as an officer without a degree, I could not have stayed in. So I decided to opt back and go to college, and this time it worked. So,
but what I admire about you, Bill, is that you have maintained your connection with the military and your concern for Vietnam veterans, and I really prize that and commend you for that.
Thank you.
And you're doing what now?
Well, I'm a franchise advisor. I help people find a business that's a good fit if they're interested in. Having a business of their own, running something of their own, and we work from the ground up to try and find something that is really tailored to the individual.
Okay, good. Now, I'm really out of my element, but I'm going to give it a shot. Do you get called Sergeant Major?
I do still get called Sergeant Major a lot of the time,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, Sergeant Major Mark Eister, retired, Director of Military Outreach. And why the military for you?
Well, back in 1990, I'd been married to my wife, Tina, for only 3 years at the time, and we had both had always grown up wanting to join the military and do our part, serve our nation. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, if we're going to do it, we need to do it now before we start having children. So we did. We joined together and kind of made headlines, you know, professionals, husband, wife, drop everything and join the military. And while we were on delayed entry, after we'd raised our hand and went on delayed entry, Saddam invaded Kuwait. And that kind of altered all of our training and kept us separated for the next 2 years while we're going through training and so forth. So we bit off more than we anticipated chewing right at the outset. But I joined actually as a musician to play for the troops, for troop morale and so forth. And my wife joined as an interrogator linguist.
Oh, my.
So we have four teenagers now, and she's still using that skill on a daily basis, doing very well at it.
I'll bet she is.
But joined in 1990 and had a wonderful career and culminated, skipping ahead to just this past year, January 1st, when I retired. And I'm culminated in a observer and evaluator role at Fort McPherson, where I would go out and evaluate units pre-deployment to determine their readiness and preparedness for war.
Wow.
So big transition there.
Yeah. Did you wind up being a musician when you served?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. I did it for a number of years, and I did a tour in Afghanistan with a musical unit, and we saw a good bit of fireworks ourselves. So the enemy didn't care who you were or what you were doing.
Uh-huh.
That's for sure.
Wow. I think we forget that. We're used to hearing the military bands in concert in our communities, but they're in concert in the desert as well.
Absolutely.
What is the title Sergeant Major?
That's the senior enlisted advisor and right-hand man to the commander, him or herself. So I'm there to take the policies and directives of the commander and ensure that all of the troops are carrying out their roles to meet the mission of the commander's intent.
Okay. That's impressive.
It's a handful.
That's impressive. Well, you know what I'm going to do, Vanessa? You are such a master at group interviews. I'm going to turn to you and say, get us started.
Well, thank you, because I've already thought of a question.
Good.
You know, I know that all of you served in active duty and have memories that are not happy, positive memories. But I am curious, what are one of your favorite memories, or what is one of your unexpected benefits of being in the military, something that you really loved about your military career?
Okay, I'll start then. A couple of things come to mind real quickly. First of all, my education. I did receive all three of my degrees paid for by the military while I was on active duty, so that was a fantastic benefit that I was able to take advantage of. Almost waited too long and got my master's right at the very end, but was very fortunate to have that. But another thing is, when we were in Afghanistan, I actually got to go into the literal home of Osama bin Laden and see where we had destroyed it.
Oh.
Shortly, excuse me, right after the right at the outset of the when we invaded, or I say go in and went after the Taliban. That was actually a highlight.
So, Bill, what about you?
I think if you remember my wandering in and out of college. You know, it was a challenge and really a maturing process. And Officer Candidate School was challenging, you know, about a 30% cut rate. I was very proud of that accomplishment and making that, really started the rest of my life, I think, you know, on a good plane from there. The day you step off the plane from a war zone is a pretty good day too. So
it really gives you a contrast of appreciating what you've got.
So but it was overall an excellent experience, and I much appreciate having it, and appreciate those like Mark who have really taken the volunteer army and the professional grade that. To a new level. It's very impressive. So.
Well, and I, my dad joined the Navy during World War II, and actually joined when he was still in high school. So he was in World War II and finished high school while he was in the service, but because of that was able to go to college and become a teacher. So it's, you know, it's really wonderful, the opportunities that our military provides to people that choose to serve as well. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yep, absolutely.
So I am curious what, you know, with the experiences that you've come from the military, how you feel like that we can say thank you to the people that we come across that serve. Are there things that you think would be really appreciated that we can say thank you, especially this week of Thanksgiving? Are there things that we can do?
Certainly. One of the things I think we can do is recognize that they're citizens, too. I think oftentimes, the veterans are looked at as like they're all the same, and they're not, just like we're all different. They're different, but they're citizens, and they're coming back to civilian life, and just treat them, just thank them, but then treat them like you would anyone else. Don't be afraid to talk to them. And certainly support them if you see they have a need. There are a great number of disabled veterans coming back, and shake their hand, thank them, but then just talk to them and treat them like you would your neighbor, because that's what they are. That's how they want to be treated. They want to just settle back into society and contribute just like we try to.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think, you know, thanking them too much, it's difficult. You know, I've been out for 40 years and someone says, thank you, I don't know how to handle it. So it's like, I just did my job, you know? I think the other thing is to be aware that there's a markedly higher percentage of unemployment among returning veterans, you know, than there is across society. Mm-hmm. And we heard last night that a speaker say there was 20% unemployment among veterans. That's right. Not politically correct to throw that number out there, but I think it's real. So, you know, to promote hiring of veterans and to help educate them if they want to become entrepreneurs, you know, and how to go about that, you know, are two really good things to do. You know, promote hiring of veterans and help educate them about, you know, what the corporate world is like and what the for-profit world is like. Yeah.
And Dick, how did you go from military? You mentioned military into teaching at Kennesaw State. What was that transition like? How did you luck out or what?
Well, you know, that's a good question because I was at an event down at Mercer University and was asked something about my perception as how the future would unfold, and, mm-hmm. I'm very positive about the future, and I cite the students that I hang around because they're very positive. And someone says, "Well, how can you be so positive?" And I said, "Well, when you spend your entire life around people that the average age is 22, and you go to university, and the average age normally is around 22 somewhere in that, and you start saying, well, you haven't really changed the people you hang out with, the mentality, you know,
that's great. I like that.
The mentality, the forward looking attitude, it's all there on the campus, and so the transition wasn't hard at all. I guess the naivete was that, you know, experience on a university campus, you only last for about a year, maybe 2 years if you're lucky. After that, you really do have to buckle down and do a lot of research, and you really have to get ahead of the power curve. Otherwise, you're just telling old war stories, and whether it be business stories or management leadership stories, they're just stories. And so you really need to get out in front and learn, you know, continue learning, and that's the part I like about it. But what was interesting about my transition, I had no idea that I would ever I'd ever teach. It was nothing that was on my radar screen until I was in charge of Army recruiting out in the western 13 states, and I was on my way to a conference room, and one of the young captains was talking to one of the older captains who had been with me for a couple of years, and said, "Well, what's he like?" And you know, they didn't know I was down the hallway, and the old one says, "Well, he's sort of like the professor you always wished you had." And at that point in time, the light bulb went off and said, maybe I ought to consider that as an option. And so that was it.
Wow.
And so a year before I retired, I went to Kennesaw and talked to the department chair of management and entrepreneurship and said, "I'll be back in a year and expect to be teaching for you." And she was gracious enough to remember that a year later when I showed up. She gave me the opportunity to teach and been doing it ever since.
That's what we call confidence, huh?
Or arrogance, yeah. But it just happened to work. And it's gotten to the point now that it's almost addictive. You know, those times when I'm not able to teach for one reason or another, it really starts to be a drain on the adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to get back in and get back in the saddle and start you know, meeting the demands of that the students place on you. Because it's not a case now where the teachers are placing a lot of demand on the students. Students are actually placing a lot of demand on the teachers to make sure that, you know, we are, in fact, delivering, you know, top-of-the-line information.
The stuff that they want, yeah.
And also applications, because just, you know, talking about something is one thing. But what I like about Coles College is we're very application-oriented, and performance is something you've got to do. You've got to perform in order to demonstrate your competency. Just answering the test is not
enough.
That's not enough. It's essential, but performance really does count significantly.
Now, if your title is Executive Director of the Center for Accountable Leaders. Define accountable leaders. How do you teach that? What's your goal when you do that?
Well, I don't teach it, and that's the interesting thing about the center. When I started the center. There's a motivational piece behind that that comes from a very unique gentleman who's a World War II veteran. He prides himself on being a corporal. He was a private during basic, and after his advanced individual training, he was promoted to corporal because he graduated top of his class at radar school, and he never got promoted beyond that. It was kind of interesting. But anyway, I guess if you were to talk about accountable, the only way I can define it is that we know men and women who have been above board. They've taken full accountability for things that happen on their watch. They're mm-hmm. not afraid to take the risk. They're also not afraid to shelter those who work for them from the outside influences. To say, you know, I'm in charge. If things go wrong, it's mine. If things go well, it's you. And that's the kind of person that we look for. And then we said, well, if we're going to make this thing a global kind of an application, who are the other kind of accountable leaders we'd like to know about? And the only standard we can come up with is that if one of the people that we knew to be accountable leaders were willing to trust another person on a handshake, then chances are that other person was accountable. So what you do is you take out all of the variances of religion and culture and things like that. If that person is worthy of your trust, then that person is probably an accountable leader. And it seems to work. And so what we've done is, rather than trying to teach leadership, is that we actually record the life memoirs of these men and women. All we do is we say, just tell us your story from the beginning, wherever you want to start and wherever you want to finish. We won't ask any questions until you're done. And the only questions we'll ask are about those things that you raise during your recollection and your reflection on your life. And then what we do is we make those available to students, and we have a program on the 30th of this month where 7 of our students have gone back and actually listened to and evaluated the lessons from 6 Georgia leaders, and they'll present their reflection at that point in time. What did they learn from these men and women, and what their takeaways were? That's basically what we do, and we leave the teaching of leadership to other people who think they can teach it. And as far as I'm concerned, it's one of those lead by example kinds of things, and my mission is to find as many examples as possible mm-hmm. That we can hold up for the rest of the world to take a look at.
Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful.
Well, and it's fascinating that you all gather stories, and that's one of the things that I love about this show that Dr. Tim and I do, is that we get to hear so many stories from so many people and find out things that we would never know otherwise. So I appreciate you sharing your stories. And Mark, I'm curious, with the work that you do at Georgia Perimeter College, mm-hmm. I'm sure that there's a lot of leadership development that goes into what you do too. So I'm wondering how you can comment on what Colonel Dick said.
Sure. Well, first off, we do have a lot of students that are veterans step forward, and they want to help each other. They want to continue the leadership that they had in the military. It's just ingrained in them, and then help their buds that are in school. And so we have like 5 AmeriCorps workers. They're under contract for AmeriCorps, but they're students and veterans, and they serve to mentor and come right alongside the veterans that either might be struggling, just need some help, just pointed in the right direction, somebody to talk to help them with the transition into school, stay in school, and on to meaningful employment. And so that's a real good example, I think, of some excellent leadership that we have going on in the school now.
Well, I do think mentoring, it can be such a instrumental thing in helping us, all of us, get through challenges that we have, is to mm-hmm. finding somebody that maybe has done that before or has a little bit of you know, encouragement along the way.
Oh, absolutely. The transition is really tough from the combat zone to the campus classroom, and then to try to get into a company. It's just a huge transition for our military, and the things they're seeing and having to go through 12-hour, 18-hour work days for 12 months solid, and then they're thrust into a classroom with 18 and 19-year-olds, and they're average about 24, 25 for the veterans. They're older, more experienced. They've seen, in many cases, very horrific things, and their life has been structured, very much structured, even in the war zone, and now it's unstructured. No one telling them where to go, what to do, what your role is, and they're trying to figure all that out, along with a new education benefit they've just been given. Like, here's all the money to go to school. It's called the Post 9/11 GI Bill, the latest, greatest, and it is wonderful. And so they're encouraged to go to school, and they're very excited about it, but it's almost overwhelming to a great number of them. And that's one of the main reasons we have the Military Outreach Center at Georgia Perimeter, is to help these veterans not just get in school, but to navigate and to get through the whole process and to just reintegrate into society and function and be whole again.
So is there anything that our listeners can do that can help your military outreach with the students that you're working with? Is there anything that we as outside people can do?
As a community, well, sure. I mean, you can refer them to us, but we're the third largest college in Georgia, and part of the university system of Georgia, and we have nearly 24,000 students. So we're able to handle a large number of students, and we're set up to help the veterans in particular. So if you know of veterans that are looking for education, certainly point them towards a school like ours or any of school that will give them meaningful education.
Well, and I know you all have a lot of campuses and have a lot of online classes as well.
We do. We have 5 campuses, and then we have the largest online instruction in the university system of Georgia as well. So, and I say all that because where you can help is when you hear veterans talking about going to school, make sure they're pointed towards a qualified, good institution, because there are a lot of schools out there that they see the VA benefit dollar sign, and they're snatching up these veterans and taking their money, basically, and giving them worthless degrees. And so now the veterans are even further behind. So point them towards some good institutions that will give them an education that will push them on to the next place in their lives.
What skills have you guys gained from being in the military that have really benefited you later on in life? I know my dad was a Vietnam vet and my grandfather was a World War II vet, and they sort of instilled some stuff in me that's given me a leg up of accountability, being places on time, and that. And I know with my generation, when I talk to employers, that's the biggest problem right now is my generation doesn't have that. They don't know how to be on time. They don't know how to be accountable. They're entitled. So can you guys talk to that a little bit?
Certainly. Well, first thing that comes to mind is mission-focused. The military is mission-focused, and that means you are on time. No, you're early. And I'll tell you what, that's very irritating to a 24- or 25-year-old that's there on time, and 7 or 8 students show up 5 minutes late, and they're just, oh, come on, let's go. We've already lost 7 minutes here.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing because they're very mission-focused, and when you give them the goal and what it is they're supposed to be doing, they grab hold of it and do a really good job. They're very mature. And it's not just what they've seen and gone through, but they're older and they've experienced a lot. And they really do wonderfully in the classroom. They really do. They just need that chance.
I think part of being there on time or ahead of time is you're also prepared.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that focus carries over, you know, and you're ready to go. I mean, the pen or pencils in your pocket, you know, and you've got what you need to get you know, to accomplish whatever it is that you're there to accomplish. And rather than walk in and say, oh, what's up?
Right on. How are your students, Dick? You said you don't necessarily have military ones. Do they come in prepared? Do they have the right attitude? You're dealing with graduate students, aren't you?
No, I'm dealing with undergraduates. I prefer the undergraduates.
Okay.
And What happens is that you really don't see the veteran per se, because at Kennesaw, you know, our average age of our undergraduate class or population is around 26, which means that we have a lot of people that went off and did something and found out that whatever they were doing didn't fit what they needed to do in the future, so they've come back to get degrees, either changed disciplines or changed entire careers, if you will. And so we've got a mix of people who are, you know, former professionals, a lot of police officers and firefighters and things like that, you know, coming through. So to sort out the veterans from the non-veteran is kind of hard. Except, I think what Mark was talking about, there is a point in time where when things seem to be all messed up, that's when you find the veteran that steps in and sort of takes the leadership role and sort of pulls it all back together and makes it work. And it isn't until times like that that you see them, you know, come to the fore. So it is a classic case of they're willing to be a member of a team, and they're willing to play by the rules that the team agrees to until such time that the performance measure isn't being established, and then they'll step forward to make sure that the performance is met. And Mark said earlier about being told what to do and when to do it and things of that nature. That's you know, I'd hate to disagree with what he said, because that is true. We have places to go and we have things to do. But normally, usually, generally, the veteran who has been a good soldier, regardless of the service, normally, usually, generally, is focused on the mission and is allowed to do what they know how to do professionally to achieve that that mission. So it isn't as if they're being told every second of every day what they're doing. They're basically focused on the end result and the performance and their piece of that. And so consequently, when you see them in the business world and you see them elsewhere, you know, trying to adjust, it is very hard for them when their bosses don't articulate what the performance measure is, what the measurable is, what the objective is. And so if you don't know where you're going, you can't help that person who thinks they're in charge to get to where they want to be if they don't allow you to get there by defining what the performance objective is. And so I think if there's a frustration in the workplace, the service member has a real hard time trying to sort out the mind-reading part. You know, what does the boss really want me to do? I have a skill set. What is it that you want me to achieve? And once that is defined, I think then you tend to work well. And I think that veterans tend to, if they bump around between jobs, what they're really looking to do is not the skill. They're looking for the leader who understands that kind of leadership to allow them to excel, knowing full well that they'll be there, they'll deliver on time.
Well, we actually see a lot of veterans coming here that end up starting their own company and being very, very successful and come through, and maybe that's because of that.
Well, you know, that's exactly right, because my I tell people that if I hadn't been in the Army, I would have been fired 1,000 times because because it's interesting. In my case, you know, things change, and things didn't go well for health reasons, things like that, so I was able to change jobs and change duties to the point I've done everything from the shooting part to the finance and accounting part and automation at very high levels, and then the last 9 years in the recruiting business, which is sales and marketing. And you know, you just can't get that kind of an experience if you know, in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. you just can't do that. And the ability to just get out there and perform and be judged based upon your performance is really a remarkable. It's a remarkable feeling for those who like to achieve things and get things done.
Well, one of the things I'd like, I know you all are being very patient waiting for one of the other three of us to ask a question, but you are certainly welcome to talk with each other and ask questions and brush us off if you're interested.
Okay, very brushed off.
Yeah.
We're out of here.
Well, that's not exactly where I wanted to go, but... Bill, you're working with franchisees or mm-hmm. potential franchisees. I assume that what Dick has been sharing really speaks to you and the kind of person you try to find.
Well, yeah. I mean, the franchise companies highly prize veterans because they have above-average level of integrity and initiative. And, yes, they are leaders. They've been trained for leadership. But they're also great team players, and they know how to follow a system. And, you know, if they know what they're trying to achieve, they'll work the system to you know, get to where, you know, what needs to be accomplished. So franchise companies really prize veterans. And my goal is to find, you know, the few that are out there that might want to go that route, because it's not for everybody, and help them make the right choice. You know, if I can, and I said this, you know, you've heard of.
Go
often.
For it.
If I can, you know, keep somebody from making a bad choice, that's as meaningful as helping somebody make the right choice. Because, you know, investing in a business is expensive, and in terms of the financial aspect and also the emotional and, you know, commitment, I mean, the part of your life. So make sure you're going at the right one and not choosing things for the wrong reason. You know, you've heard me say don't. Just because you like ice cream is not a reason to buy an ice cream franchise.
Exactly. Yeah. I've heard that.
Yes,
I've heard
yes.
that. So, but that, when you said that, that spoke to me, too.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. Mark, you're the young one of the group here.
Why, thank you.
Except for Kevin.
Easily done.
But your take on military, your post-Vietnam, did that have any impact on you, or do you relate to that at all? Or is,
absolutely. We do have a few Vietnam veterans that are students, but aside from that, I know a number of Vietnam veterans, and I've done my homework and research, and my father-in-law's a decorated veteran from Vietnam, and so we talk a lot. But I do understand and fully recognize how they got the short end of the stick, for mm-hmm. sure, mm-hmm. coming out of Vietnam. And I think as a nation and as a community, as a society, we learned a lot from that and how that was just horrendous, how they were treated. And they're making some recompense in that area now. They'll never make up for it completely, nowhere close. But mm-hmm. But we're certainly doing a lot better job now with today's veterans. Sometimes it's almost too many resources. You have to be careful. You know, there's so many great resources out there. You need to make sure you're going after the right ones that can truly help you. Like Bill was saying, making sure you're going after the right thing for you so that you don't make a wrong mistake. Mm-hmm. But so that's another reason that we have the outreach centers in Georgia Perimeter and other colleges, is to point the veterans towards the right resource for them to get them help, because it is a great contrast to the Vietnam era.
Okay. Can you help me with a perspective? You know, I go into places and they'll say, write a letter to somebody, we'll send it to them. Donate candy here, we'll get it over there. I don't know if, Dick, Bill, if you experienced that in Vietnam, but is there value in that? Do the military people appreciate letters from Jill and Joe and John and whatever that they don't know, but they're just writing? What's your take on that?
I think there's a package with good stuff in it is probably the biggest morale booster. The letters are nice, I'm sure. You know, and kids that send letters to veterans, unnamed veteran, and I think that's important, because the veteran tends to understand what children are going through. And when children are communicating with veterans and soldiers and service members, it's building a bond between generations, and I think that's important. But for the soldier in the field, you know, a care package from anybody really gets your support system, your internal support system, up and running.
I agree. Mail call has always been at near the top of the list. In any era, and when it involves a package with goodies, it's very welcomed. But it also does something for the sender. It gets the hands busy on stateside of children and churches and communities and all coming together to send packages, sometimes to folks they don't even know. And it gives them a way to contribute, because they do want to do something. And so it helps on both ends, I think.
And if people wanted to send a package to someone that they don't know, what's the way to do that it can make it through? Because I'm sure that they have a lot of security that they scan, you know, packages, and they don't want to distribute anything that's going to be a problem. Is it through Red Cross that people would do that? Or
there's a number of societies. You can actually just send them yourself and get lists from local. The best thing I've seen is just to get in touch with your local military that's deployed. And they have that information. You can send packages directly to. You can even get names and send them directly to soldiers, troops in that command. And now it's coming from their community. And so that's a really good way to do it.
I like that. I like that. You want to weigh in, Bill?
Well, I think, when Dick was talking about care packages from home, several things popped up. And you're right. It's always good to get a treat from home to see things. You know, I mean, my parents and friends used to send me, newspapers from the local newspaper, and it was great to read, just what was going on, in your hometown, when you're 6,000 miles away or actually more than that, whatever it is on the other side of the world. So those are good. And there's, I don't know if Operation Homefront.
That's one.
Can they, they do some great things, sure. You know, they're right over there in East Cobb County. So, helping folks like that, send them cards. There's usually a program comes out to send Christmas cards to troops, and I've done that several times. So that's always a good thing.
And when troops are in between places, the USO is virtually there everywhere. And so when you're moving between assignments or you're coming back for a small respite, things like that, the USO is always at the airports and places like that. So, again, contributing through them is a good way to deal with it as well.
Yeah. That's a piece that impresses me, because the few times that I do fly out of Hartsfield-Jackson Airport and the USO is there and some troops are coming in or going out, they lead all the people in applauding.
Yep.
That's got to feel good for the troops. It feels good for me to watch that and see it happen.
Absolutely. Except for those who are introverted, and then it's stressful.
Awkward.
Yeah, I've done that, Tim. I've been down there with the USO and welcome troops home and hand them a phone card or just shake their hand I can't even talk sometimes when I'm shaking their hands. And then somebody leads them out. There's always a group comes in and a group goes out. And our Vietnam Veterans Business Association, is down there very regularly. And there's always somebody that leading them out with a flag, that gets you too. So
yeah, it does. Well, I have. Go ahead. Who's somebody?
Well, no? You must have heard me thinking of a
that
question.
Was you.
If we have time,
I did.
It's kind of going back a little bit to talking about how vets have such focus and such mission focus, and that they're disciplined and that kind of thing. And I remember a few years ago meeting a recruiter that said that they specialized in placing athletes, so college-level athletes, because companies knew that they were focused and they were disciplined and that they knew how to work through challenges. And I would think it would be a similar type of thing for vets as well.
You see a lot of there's a lot of activity going on. It's very positive right now in that effort. And there's a group called The Value of Veteran that is going around the country and talking to companies and making presentations to executives and here's how to, some things like here's how to interview a veteran. Here's some of these skills translate into, civilian positions and people have a military resume and you've got military speak on it, with all the acronyms and all that. Well, here's what that means and here's what that does. So there's a lot of positive activity about that.
So if they have these letters, this means that they've done, they've got these kind of skills because they had to do this for their
exactly,
job.
Exactly. Yeah. So, it just, you get into a lot of different things but people tend to think of you as, carrying a gun and that's all you can do.
I appreciate what you said, Dick, about, you learned to do marketing. You learned to do this, and it was all in the military.
But, I think, Bill, you've got a point, because the thing that came to mind when you were talking is that we had the opportunity working for a national online university, doing some consulting work, where we went out and evaluated what the soldiers, airmen, and Marines were learning out at Fort Gordon, which is the signal school. And now that we've gone more joint services, all the services have a major component for the signal school out of Fort Gordon. And here are men and women who can operate information technology infrastructure. And you say, okay, that's fine, but not only do they operate it, but they pack it up in boxes, they ship it around the world, they assemble it in the middle of a desert, they keep it running in 130-degree temperature during a sandstorm, And oh, by the way, every 3 or 4 days they pack it up and they move it someplace else, because to leave it in one place makes it susceptible to attack. And you say, well, geez, you know, the soldier doesn't have the skills requisite to sit in an air-conditioned room and wait for something to go wrong. I say, wait a minute, there's a major disconnect in the understanding as to what the capability is of of that person. You know, in Bill's discipline, flying aircraft, just try keeping an aircraft running in the middle of the desert, or anything running in the middle of the desert for long periods of time, and be available when you need it. These are people who can do some very horrific things under very demanding circumstances, and to say, oh, they just operated something, or they just fixed something, or they just did something, is really to minimize what they really are capable of doing, because they've been pushed to extremes in extreme conditions, not just once, but as a matter of getting up every morning, the extremes are pushed. Now, if you come back to peacetime and you're sitting in a post someplace, it gets really boring, because you're kind of used to that. Every 2 or 3 days, or maybe every 2 or 3 minutes, there's a disaster that has to be dealt with. But so I think that part of understanding the veteran is to understand that they really do thrive in very, very challenging circumstances, where very high performance is essential. Aircraft that stop flying, you know, proves that gravity does work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, taking a short course on physics is probably not what you wanted to have happen. So.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I appreciate you guys getting that message out there, and I think that's really overlooked when it comes to veterans. I was surprised to find that 20% of veterans are unemployed, because every employer that I talk to says, I wish I had veterans, with the kids that they're dealing with nowadays.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one of the early questions was, you know, and I sort of gave the signal that I didn't want to talk about it. And what was going through my mind is that, you know, we do a lot of things, and sometimes we think we're important, and other times we don't. But I think to your point, though, is that, you know, my two kids, I mean, bless their hearts, they learned a lot from their mother and myself, just by, you know, being in the family where performance and high standards and ethics rule. And so you have to say, wait a minute, did we do our progeny a service or a disservice by our service? And I think that if we can look back and said that, you know, at least our kids left with the right respect for other people, the right understanding for you know, community service, and being fully engaged and being top of your game at every time you turn out. I think that is probably the biggest thing that that we as service members can do, is to make sure that our kids understand, and hopefully they'll influence other people that they come in contact
with. You said it earlier, the thing that really sticks with me the most is the accountability, and that's what I don't see from my friends around me. And my parents made me take accountability for everything, and that's something that stuck with me a long time. And having that, being able to admit I was wrong, I made a mistake, is you grow as a person. So.
Right, exactly.
Well, it's happened as it does every time. The clock is on us. And I have not given any of you a chance to throw out your contact information, and I do want to have that opportunity for you. So, Dick, if people want to learn more about the program you have at Kennesaw or anything like that at all, how might they be in touch with you?
The best way is through our website. It's coles.kennesaw.edu/TCAL, T-C-A-L.
Okay, thank you. Mark?
Well, I'm at Georgia Perimeter College, so it's gpc.edu, and you can just look for the military outreach page, and it's very easy to find right there on the main website.
Yours isn't so easy, is it?
Well, it depends. Yeah. Website is
okay.
If I could stay in the theme. .com, franchiseadvisors.com / Bill B. Williams. So
okay.
They can find a lot about information there.
Well, this has been an absolutely fascinating, almost an hour. Seriously, I am so glad Bill helped me put this together. I thank you so much for that, helping us get Dick and Mark in here along with yourself. Vanessa and Kevin, thank you for throwing in your questions. I think it just makes for a rich situation for all of us.
Well, and I'm so grateful that you all shared so many ideas on how we can say thank you to our veterans. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. And you can learn more about Right Choice Services and how we help individuals write the book they've always wanted to write at www.writechoiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email and invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time at righterightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. Again, thank you to Kevin and to Vanessa for joining me. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when Vanessa will be the host for Business Leaders, Entrepreneurs, and Professionals, who will come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.